Between relapses this fall, I wrote an ambitious sequence on the subject of alcoholism entitled The Second Step. The epigraph is the second of the 12 steps from the Big Book. We came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. One, for rich or for poor. 4,000 acres, every parcel squared. A river oxbowed through it, and its beds drained it of torrents, every summer sheds, and there never a prairie rose was spared. The day we met, Ed glared up at my chin and scoffed at my pretensions. Boy, your bank holds you in hock. Where do you think you rank? You're just a worm of Eve conceived in sin. Spindly, I thought it. Wheat sick in the dust. Wheat? This is bluegrass in its second year, and every bushel here is free and clear, and six Kentucky dollars I can trust. I watched a hand herd cattle. Is that Dan? Pay no mind to my son. He's just a drunk. But decades later, when their farm is sunk, I search out Dan, survivor of his clan, to ask for help. All Ed's vast fortune gone is nothing to the little girl Dan lost, and $30 million, trifling cost, notes swept by a whirlwind from a lawn. Will he befriend an Irishman who seeks to marry abstinence and piety? We are both bankrupt, but sobriety, Dan measures it in decades, I in weeks. Two poets. Mikey's idea of going on the wagon was sorrowfully to pour that final flagon of single malt whiskey down the drain, then switch to marijuana and cocaine. He simply couldn't comprehend the danger of drying out, although he was no stranger to white-knuckling the vomit and the shakes. He didn't know he gamed for mortal stakes. Three times I have been felled by lightning pain as seizures short-circuited my brain. Three times waking in hospital at dawn, all memory of my repertoire was gone, and once I'd nearly bitten through my tongue. Let me leave self-destruction to the young, who need not fear, not yet, the fatal stroke that lifted from my friend addiction's yoke. 3. My mentor. Walwork could be the soberest man on earth, except that he was wasted half the time, able to give a million, shave a dime. Money was central to his sense of worth. Should not have been the case. Harvard degree, intellect incandescent in the extreme, a trophy wife, a life lived in a dream turned nightmare for its want of sanctity. Walwork was an enabler for me, forcefully putting forth his moneyed power to finance mortgaged farms where I could glower, blind to my growing inebriety. I have loved men divorced from heaven's grace, for whom, fraying my jeans, I nightly pray and earn indulgences on All Souls' Day. Of Walwork and my poet friend I say, embrace them, Lord, let them behold your face. 4. In absentia. Waking at 7, I should be at my meeting, sober as any lawyer, any plumber. Tonight I had signed up to do the greeting, to search the hopeless eyes of each newcomer and say to him, nobody here is flawless. We have 12 laws, and all of us are lawless. In the 3 years before I recovered my faith, I was deeply suicidal because of economic distress, because of accelerating alcoholism, And in a desperate attempt to straighten myself out, I resorted to psychoanalysis with a brilliant psychologist named Dr. Richard Kolotkin. I wrote a poem in his voice named Case Notes. This poem appeared in the Hudson Review and is in the Penguin Pocket Anthology of Modern American Poetry. Case Notes for Dr. Richard Kolotkin, March 7th. Raped at an early age by older altar boy. Damned by the church to hell, never to sire a son, perhaps man's greatest joy, said father in a rage. Patient was 21, handled it pretty well. March 14th. Curiously have learned patient was Eagle Scout. Outraged that scouts have spurned each camper who is out, questioned if taunts endured are buried? No, immured. March 21st. Allured by verse and drink when he was just 16, turned to drugs at Yale. Patient began to think people would see a queen, scrawny, friendless, frail, a queer condemned to fail. April 1. Into a straight town he brought a sober lover. Worked smarter, drank harder to stock an empty larder. Wrote poetry, the cover for grief he cannot drown. April 9th. Uneasy with late father, feared for by his mother, lover and younger brother, various neuroses, but no profound psychosis. Precarious prognosis. After suffering a pair of nearly fatal brain seizures in September of 2007, I voluntarily committed myself to Prairie St. John's Hospital for treatment, and while I was there, I wrote a poem which is very much in the ecstatic, rhapsodic, Bride of Christ tradition of St. John of the Cross. It's a short poem entitled Prayer for Sobriety. Morning glories, climbing the garden wall, vie with the fragrant jasmine to outshine the sun emerging from a summer squall. Blossom and vine, lover and love entwine, he is the groom, and I, the shy betrothed, enraptured by the faith I so long loathed. This is the sacramental cup we drink, this the unleavened loaf on which we dine. Deliverance from the sins to which I sink. Here is the book, the work of my divine Redeemer, at whose word the worlds revolve. Let me return his passion with resolve. Prayer for Sobriety and many more of my versifications on the subject of alcoholism were published by Chimera, a zine in Australia, edited by Paul Stevens. The next poem was the first poem that I published in Poetry magazine. My earlier poems on alcoholism, prior to my rejoining the church, the only way I could deal with the issue was through highly metaphorical terms. And this poem is entitled Mortal Stakes. Partridge flee to the headland straw when combines take their final lap. A vixen leaves a severed paw to free her foreleg from a trap. The killdeer, feigning a fractured wing, would lure me past the gravel flat where spotted chicks are cowering as though I were some feral cat. No strategy of fight or flight liberates me from instinct's grip. I crave the whiskey's amber light, the balm of ice against my lip. Salmon swimming toward a tarn, fatten a grizzly in the foam, racing into its flaming barn, the white-eyed mare is headed home. My favorite painter of the American West is Charlie Russell. Unlike his peers, he actually cowboyed in the Judith Basin along the Muscle River in Montana. He drank himself to death in 1928. This poem is entitled The Cook Fire. Both the phrase, huge despair, and the final phrase of the poem, invincible desire, are lifted from my master Richard Wilbur. The Cook Fire. There is this demon in my lower brain. Call him the devil. Call him Charlie Russell. He guzzles alcohol to dull his pain and Russell's calves beside the little muscle. Why is he pained? Perhaps because the sky is scared to call the Badland its horizon. Perhaps because a pony on the fly shies from the short horns of a charging bison. One of the Russells hanging in my head captures the struggles of a grizzly bear, twice roped, spread-eagled, kicking apart a bed of coals and ashes in his huge despair. What overcomes insensate fear of fire, abandon, or invincible desire? And while we're on the subject of Richard Wilbur, I'll close this little reading with a painful truth. Even more corrosive than the disease is the dishonesty and the denial that sets in. The last line of this little poem, which appeared in The Formalist, is the last line of Richard Wilbur's great masterpiece, Hamlin Brook. How shall I drink? When you are sick and drunk, the ones to whom you lie are those who love you most. The ones whose hearts are sunk by all that you deny. When they embrace a ghost, nothing can satisfy. Two further acknowledgments. It appears that the second step will be divided between the new criterion and First Things. And The Cook Fire appeared in Very Far North, which was published by the Wehweiser Press in London.